is to get vast numbers of people to believe anything as long as you tell them through the mainstream media. Because at least the overwhelming majority of the people that were laughing at me were laughing not at what I was saying, but what the media reported me as saying, which is completely different. And even today, I mean, you'll acknowledge this. Anyone who's not actually bothered to find out what I'm saying still thinks I'm some loony who thinks he's the Messiah. I've written about 9 books now saying the whole Messiah thing is actually part of the process of giving your power away and waiting for the troops to come across the flipping horizon on the white horse. We have to do it, not wait for some Messiah. And actually, I was reading The Messiah's Coming on a Cloud. I was thinking the other day, if we don't rain. But the whole period of that was very nightmarish in the moment, but with hindsight, I wouldn't change a thing. The thing, funnily enough, I had an amazing experience, which I guess was a trigger point. See, I see a difference between religion and spirituality. I see religion in its... I mean, people can express spirituality through religion, fine. But in its empire structural form, not only is it overwhelmingly controlled in most of its forms, if not all its forms, by the same people that control the banks, it's also about imposing a belief system on someone. Spirituality is the opposite of that. It's about setting the spirit free and celebrating the uniqueness of spirit, not allowing someone else to impose a belief system. Actually, the opposite of religion. So I'm into spirituality, not religion. And that time, I think I mentioned right at the start of this, I started bumping into psychics wherever I went and stuff, and they were giving me information, 99% of which has actually happened in my life since. And they said I was right. One of them said I would write 5 books in 3 years, which I thought was completely crazy. I mean, trying to get 5 books published is difficult enough in 3 years, never mind writing them, and on a subject which at that time I hadn't got a clue about. I thought, what's happening to my life? Why am I meeting these people? But it happened to the month that I did the 5 books in 3 years. And when the first one was away at the printers, and this was the key point that transformed me from a television presenter into what I'm doing now, I suppose, it happened in early 1991. I'm sitting at home. I lived on a little island in England. I don't now. I'm in Wiltshire, but I lived then in a little island called the Isle of Wight off the south coast near Portsmouth. Rural Britannia, all that stuff. And I got this overwhelming feeling to go to Peru. Don't ask me why, but I did. And I buy the tickets to go to Peru. I mean, it's about 1,500 quid. What am I doing going to Peru? Just on intuition. And then I met this psychic lady who said to me, have you ever thought of going to Peru? You know? And I thought, funny enough, I just have. So I get on the plane to Peru. This is February 1991. And I get off the plane at Lima Airport with my suitcases. I get them off from, you know, baggage reclaim. And I'm stood, it's about 6 o'clock in the morning, something like that. No, 5:30. And I'm stood there with my cases thinking, what the hell are you doing here? Because I didn't know, really. I just thought, go to Peru. And what am I doing here? And even at that time of the morning, thanks ever so much, double gin this time, sir. And the place is crowded with people talking a language you don't understand. So I'm a little boy lost now, and I'm thinking, what are you doing here? Pillock. And out of the crowd came this guy, speaking passable English, and he said, where you go? I thought, I wish I knew. So the one place I'd heard of, and I thought I'd give that a look, was a place called Cuzco. So I said, Cuzco, you have hotel? No, don't even know where it is. Follow me. So I follow him through the crowd, like little boy with me cases. And he takes me over, he gets on the phone, he gets me a hotel, takes me gets me the tickets for the flight. Obviously he's on a commission, you know. And I've looked up at the departure board in Lima Airport, which incidentally, if the planet was a physical body, they would put the enema in Lima Airport. I'm not kidding you. They really would. I am not kidding you. I've been some places in my life, but none worse than that. Anyway, the rest of Peru is fantastic, but not Lima Airport. So what I've done, being English, I've seen there's a plane going in about 20 minutes. 20 past 6 it went, I remember, in the morning. Being English, I've gone and stood at the back of the queue, haven't I? This great long queue for this flight, because we love queuing in England, you know. You know, if you stand still in the street for long enough, someone will come and stand behind you, you know. We love it. So there I am. So there I am. at the back of this queue, and this guy comes over to me. He says, no, follow me, follow me. So I'm walking behind this guy up to the front of the queue. And all these people are looking at me. I'm thinking, what's going on here? The guy is checking in somebody at the front of the queue. This fellow is with me, puts his arm across, stops the guy, whacks my stuff in front of the check-in man, who immediately picks it up and starts checking me in. Because they're mates. They got a deal. So I get on this plane, and I fly to Cuzco. I get in this hotel this guy's provided for me. And I'm little boy lost again. I think, well, what now? And I had one name that was given to me by someone in Canada. And it was a woman who actually lived in Cuzco and spoke English. She was Canadian. So I rang her. It turns out she works for the local travel agent, tourist agency. So I went around seeing her. Within an hour, I've got all my travel details for nearly 3 weeks sorted out and a Peruvian guide. Thank you. So I go and see this Peruvian guide the next morning. And he runs this little vegetarian cafe place in Cuzco, and he's sleeping on the floor in this place. And I walk in, and the first things he says to me is, do you have any dreams last night? I thought, well, that's a good start. Good morning, how are you? And the funny thing was I'd had a vivid, in Technicolor dream the night before that one of these two front teeth fell out. So I told him, and he said, is your father or grandfather still alive? I said, well, your father is. He says, well, that's usually symbolic of your father or grandfather dying. I thought, this is going to be a great 3 weeks, this. Once you get out of Lima, getting, I don't know if you've been to Peru, but getting an international call out of Peru outside of Lima is not easy. By the time I got a call out to England, my father had died at that time, back in England. Funny. It was good, actually, because he'd been suffering like crazy for 6 months, and he was best out of it. And we travel around Peru, and we go to these various places and stuff. And we end up, this is the leading up to the moment that transformed me from television presenter to where I am now. We went to this place called Puno in southern Peru, not far from Lake Titicaca, highest navigable lake in the world, where there's lots of UFO activity, seems to be. And the guide books me in this hotel called the Siyustani, which is named after an Inca burial site, or what's claimed to be a burial site, about an hour away. Isn't it funny? Every time they find an ancient site, it's a burial site. Have you noticed that? I think the ancients must have gone around burying people all the time. It's never an energy site or initiation chamber, is it? It's always a burial site. Anyway, it's supposed to be a burial site. So there's pictures of this place all over this hotel. So I'm giving a hint here. I want to go and see that place. So the guy says, oh, no, you said you can't do it. You can't do it. There's no tourist places out. And tourist runs out. That's the wrong time of year. So I said, well, I've got to go. I feel it. So I hired this tourist van, tourist man driving the van, me and the guide in the back. Abbott and Costello, we were at the back there. Isn't it? And we go out to this place, about an hour drive, and it was very nice, beautiful actually, a three-sided a lagoon around it, and the stones on the top, and the whole of the... It was all very, very uninhabited area, desolate area, beautiful though. Get in the van to go back. About 3 minutes down the road, literally, I'm looking out the window of this van, just looking, you know, admiring the scenery, and I see this mound on my right. And... You know, I don't hear voices, not at the moment anyway. I follow intuition. I just follow my intuition, which is, you. The more you follow your intuition, it's like anything, the more sensitive it becomes, because you're using it more. Not that you're a genius, it's just that you're using it. It's like a muscle, I suppose, in a way. But at that time, when my mind was just opening, I did hear a few voices. And this voice was actually coming from this mound. Now, this is a few weeks, ladies and gentlemen, after I was introducing The Sport on BBC. And now this mound's talking to me. See? Things are very strange here. And this mound was saying, me, come to me, come to me, come to me. I'm thinking, that bloody mound's talking to me. I'm going off my head here. So I said to the guy, could you stop the van, stop the van? I'm just going up that mound, like. And I said, only be a couple of minutes. I thought I would. I get out of the van and I walk up this mound. When I get to the top, I couldn't see it from the road, there is a stone circle at the top of this mound. The stones are only about that high, about waist high. And it's a circle not that big, but I went and stood in the middle of it, minding my own business, and I'm looking back at Siyustani, where I've come from, which is a beautiful sight, piercing hot sunny day, beautiful blue sky. And suddenly my feet were like two gigantic electromagnets were pulling them down into the earth, and my feet started to burn. Then my arms go in the air like that, right? And I'm thinking, what a pillock! What's going on here? you know, and if you hold your arms up for, well, I mean, mine are starting to wake already. I stood like that for over an hour. Because what happened then was like a drill feeling going in the top of my head. I didn't know any of this about energy and all this stuff at the time. I'm just opening up. What's going on here? This, like a drill going in the top of my head, and there was an energy flow going up from my feet and out through the top of my head, two-way flow. And then I heard this other voice, ever so clear, it's one of the clearest I've ever heard. It said, it will be over when you feel the rain. Now, there's a piercing bloody blue sky and the sun's out. I'm thinking you could be here for a month, man, you know. And that, for me, was the final confirmation that it was flip time. Because this couldn't possibly happen. And you know when you drive a car and you can't remember the last 2 miles, don't remember that. Well, it was like that, in, out, in, out. Oh, I'm still here then. And it was like a piece of classical music getting louder and louder and louder. This energy got more and more fierce and it started coming out of my hands as well. And then on one of my comeback periods to consciousness in this thing, I saw over the distant mountains a grey mist which got darker and darker. And it was obviously rain, you know. I thought, I hope that's coming my way. So over the next little while, where I think it was about an hour and 15 minutes, whatever segment it was, but maybe about 45 minutes, I don't know, time became meaningless. This storm starts to come towards me. And eventually the sun's gone in, the blue sky's disappeared, full of clouds, thunder and lightning, like Hammer House of Horror. This energy's now piercing at the top of my head. And it started to rain. And when it started to rain, it was like someone had just flicked a switch off, an electrical switch. The energy coming through me just stopped. And I staggered forward, because now my arms, which I couldn't feel, are agony. And my legs were like jelly. My legs are like jelly. And what I hadn't noticed till that point is the Peruvian guide's got fed up of waiting in the van, and he's come up to see what's going on. And I looked across at him, and he's going like that at me, you know. Mad Englishman. You know. Now, I couldn't sleep that night because my feet were still burning like fire. And for about 20 minutes, I grabbed this crystal, trying to take the vibes out of my hands. And from that time on, if I can trace everything back, that's when everything changed. And I started talking openly about this spiritual awakening that was going on. Something was happening to me. And that the earth was... I was getting ever so clear at that time, really powerfully. Massive changes in the earth. Massive changes coming on all levels. Weather changes, geological changes, consciousness changes. Everything's going to change in the next, 10, 15 years and so. This was 1991. And I started talking about it. And of course, what kind of happens at that time? What happened, I feel, there was like my eggshell was hit by an exocet. And higher dimensions of my consciousness started to pour into the three-dimensional world like a dam bursting. And when it initially happens, if it happens powerfully, very quickly, then of course your consciousness is symbolically like a bowl of water. You know, if you've got a bowl of water and it's got an inch of water in the bottom and you leave it alone, then it's calm. But if you want to raise the level of the water from down the bottom to the top of the bowl, you turn the tap on, right? Symbolic of this energy coming in, this dam burst of consciousness, there's chaos, because suddenly that balance you had before at a lower level is suddenly hit by this energy, and it's trying to find balance in this new situation before you find balance again. And of course then you find balance at a higher level than before, like the water going up the bowl. So in that period, because it's like, if you one of the things I think is happening, well, the thing I think is happening now is we're going from imbalance to balance on all levels. And if you get a pair of scales and you put something heavier on one side, well, there's an imbalance. But once the thing stopped crashing around, when you put the weight on, it comes to what I call a state of imbalance or balanced imbalance. One side of the scales is further down than the other, but it's steady and it's still. It's come to some kind of equilibrium. When you put a weight on the other side of equal weight to bring the scales to balance, they don't go to balance like that. They go to balance like that. as they find the new equilibrium. They thrash about a bit. And that's what happened to me in that period, as this new equilibrium was found. And that is what I feel is happening now in the planet. And it's that which is the transitional period we're going through on all levels, individually, collectively, geologically, weather, electromagnetically, from balance to imbalance to balance, and the new equilibrium which is found. The transitional period is the scale thrashing about, which I feel now we're entering very, very quickly. My scale thrashed about on live chat shows in Britain and on the front pages of the tabloid newspapers, see? So that's how I kind of came about. But once, funnily enough, it was all part of my progression and my life experience to do what I'm doing now, because all the publicity, the initial publicity of what I was talking about, was during the scales thrashing about in my consciousness. And the moment that the scales settled down, and wow, could I see the world in a different light now, and a very grounded way, which I didn't in the transitional period there of about 3 or 4 weeks, suddenly the media spotlight was turned off me for a while. So basically I was stuck for the next few years, not with what I was, but with what I was going through in a very, very small period of about three weeks, when my consciousness was going through the shift from one state of being to another. Now that was not by accident, because it was fantastic for me, because like I say, it allowed me to see how easy it is to program people en masse, and it also let me step out of jail of the fear of what other people think of me, and that's been absolutely essential in what I've done ever since, because it's fantastic when you do that, because no one can ask you a question that floors you, because you just speak from your heart without any fear of trying to put it in a way that you think is acceptable to anybody. See, why politicians are always can be given a hard time in a proper interview, not the easy ones they get given by Council on Foreign Relations frontmen, but in a good interview, is because they're always trying to say what they think people want to hear, and they're always trying to hide things they think people don't want to hear. So it's a bit of an ordeal to be interviewed in that situation. But when you just open your mouth and say what you feel, then you can't be flawed anymore, because you've always got that most balancing of reaction to any question. That's an interesting question. I don't actually know that. But we seem so frightened of saying I don't know. Certainly politicians do. That's why they seem to have an answer for everything, most of which don't make any sense, because they're making up as they go along. Same with religion, stuff like that. They're trying to defend a belief system instead of speak from the heart, which is why they get into trouble. You realize when you step out of that jail that there is actually nothing to fear about speaking out in public, about being interviewed and speaking out to anybody, because you just say what you think, and if people don't like it, well, they can do the other thing just as good. You know, when I speak at night, if people say, yeah, that was okay, or throw tomatoes, it doesn't matter, because from my point of view, because I wake up the next morning, I open the curtains, the sun comes up, and I get on with my life. That's just an experience, it's gone. And so that period was a nightmarish in the moment, but I wouldn't change a thing, because it set me free. Okay. Don't be shy. I don't know.
It's Dr. Ed Young. He's the editor-in-chief.
Yeah. Oh, he's not shy. He's the editor.
You see, even locally you get ridiculed.
Yeah?
It's part of our testing. We were sitting here, David, just your friend.
We wouldn't want to miss a word.
Depends on which one of the seven are speaking. We were just sitting here discussing what actually is a kind of testing that one goes through in, I call it, the steps of the school to become a teacher on this planet at this time. And we were remarking on what a rough testing. Several of us were discussing this last evening. Would we be able to stand up to the kind of testing that, say, you just described this afternoon, that Doris has been through for some time, and several of us have been through in the learning that leads up to where we're all at right now. And I just wondered if you had anything you would add on that subject, because for many of us in the room, there are kinds of testing, and then there is the next plateau, and then the next testing. And as all hell breaks loose, which I agree with you, I think it'd be more like 4 months,
yeah,
rather than six.
Sure.
And
I was giving it the bigger window. I agree with you. I think it's nearer four.
Yes, and I just thought maybe you might have some things to share on this business of the testing and that, because many of us in here could use the advice.
Well, I think that any experience we can take as an unpleasant experience, or we can take it as an experience. It's a choice. See, people say, oh, I had no choice. We never, ever have no choice. We have choices we'd rather not make, and choices we'd rather make, but we never have no choice. I feel that if we get out of the emotion again, not that I'm against emotion, it's getting emotion out of the dominating point, really. I think, you know, what we're really all looking for is balance. People talk about, you've got to get rid of the ego. I've got to get rid of the ego. If you've got to get rid of the ego, it wouldn't be there. Nothing's there unless it's meant to be there. It's actually not letting the ego dominate everything else, and it's about not letting the emotions dominate everything else or the intellect dominate everything else, but get the balance, therefore the best aspects of all levels of being. And what we've tended to do is get conditioned of it through the emotions to hold on to emotion. And so the evolutionary experience, learn, evolve, becomes an emotional minefield which we hold on to. It's interesting, if whether I mentioned this tonight, I talk so much, I never remember when I've said it, when I haven't. if I'm repeating myself, just tell me I'm a strange man. And you know, if you see a child and they have an emotional experience and they start to cry, within seconds, right, even minutes maybe, that child can be in a completely different space, because the emotion has gone and now the child's doing something else and the previous emotion's been forgotten. Now, the further you go on into adulthood, the bigger time we seem to take to get over emotional experiences. So something that a child will get over in seconds might take somebody else, an adult, weeks to get over, might have to take to their beds. Because the child comes into incarnation with not a blank sheet of paper, because we're the sum total of all experiences, but without the conditioning in that life of all the emotional stuff and all the stuff we take on the longer we go through it. So it's like, from a child's point of view, it's the child's version of piece of shit, walk away. Because it's had the experience, and now its attention's been taken by something else, and that's forgotten. Get on with your life. Just, within seconds, could be laughing, and everything's fine. And what we tend to do is we turn the evolutionary process of experience into an emotional minefield. So it's like if someone comes up to you and has a go at you. Now, we do have a choice here. We can have a choice, and a lot of these tests that we're going through now are like this. They're not, I would say, tests so much as necessary evolutionary honing for the job we've come here to do. And if you get into the emotion of the thing, then they can be they can add to the baggage and actually make you in a situation where you don't do the job as well as you can do it. If you take it as an experience to learn from without taking the emotional baggage with you, then the so-called tests just become an experience on the road to getting to the state of mind, the state of being that you need to be to do the job. For instance, if someone comes and has a go at you and starts laying at you and saying, you're this, you're that, you're the other, well, you've got a choice. You can get hooked into their state of being, and therefore, it's really now a big problem, because you have a problem with them having a problem, and you're playing on their playing field, you're playing away. They're projecting at you a vibration, which is their state of being. They're projecting something within them, because it's never personal, at you. Now, if you stay on your vibrational field that doesn't get hooked into that, and just says, in a not a detached way, but an emotionally independent way, why have I pulled this person into my life? What am I meant to learn from that? What is it telling me? Okay, I see that. Okay, right, let's move on then. You're not taking on all this emotional baggage, which actually drags you down. If you take on the baggage and you get caught into that, then not only do they throw you a vibrational hook, which you've now accepted within yourself, you're throwing them one. So now there's a cycle going between you. And that cycle is vibrationally operating on the energy field they're projecting, not what you're projecting. You've been hooked into their vibrational state. So these experiences then become massive emotional things. And they get full of resentment and guilt and all this stuff. If we can just see that there's no such thing in creation as punishment, only evolutionary experience, and that we attract to us what we need to evolve to higher and higher levels of consciousness. These characters that run the world, they are now in the process of attracting to them colossal consequences for what they have done. It is not a punishment. It is the means through which they are going to get out of the state they're in into a higher state by facing the consequences of being in the lower state. And if we can just see it as that point and get out of the personality, because it's never personal. What we're doing all the time, we think we're making statements about other people in what we say and do, but we're actually making a statement about ourselves constantly in our own state of being. When you realize it's not personal, I mean, I came across a saying once which I was going to have to put on some t-shirts. It said, "Piss off, I'm having a bad day, don't take it personally." which I think is brilliant, because it is never personal, and we need to get out of the personality. And this is very important for what you're talking about, these tests, these challenges that we have, so that they become 100% positive evolutionary experiences instead of all this emotional stuff that make them worse than they need to be. Because if we're projecting a vibe, which is our imagination of ourself, and we're pulling in other electromagnetic fields, which we call people, places, ways of life, experiences, that connect synchronistically with the vibe we're putting out. In other words, we're creating a physical replica of our subconscious mind all the time in front of our eyes. Then if we've pulled somebody in, and they pulled us in, it is because my state of being represents something they need to experience and face to get what they need to learn and to experience to move on. And I have pulled them in because I need to face something or observe something on the journey of learning, something that they can offer me. Now, if you see it from that perspective, then you take the experience, but you don't get caught into the personality and the big emotion of it, and then you walk away. If you get caught into the emotion of it, then it's a nightmare. And this is actually very, very important at this time, on a collective and an individual basis. Because I don't know about you, but everywhere I go, including me here, over the last 6 months, have been immense emotional challenges that have come my way and the way of so many other people. And what I feel is happening in this period of change, vibrational change, is that my feeling is that consciousness, left to its own devices, naturally wants to gravitate to higher and higher dimensions. However, if you put a diver on the bottom of the sea, and with no weights on their feet, deep sea diver, float to the top. So you put weights to hold them down. The weights that